afternoon, and I'd remind the members that are here about our need to start on time, but the reminder ought to go to the members that aren't here, so it sort of is not all that useful to do it to the ones that are here. It is important. I know we all have lunch commitments that we try to actually start at 1 o'clock or as close as possible to 1 o'clock. We are going to start with some possible measure introduction today. And in front of you was the LC we didn't have in front of you yesterday. This is LC 1957. Provides that insurer following reimbursement by a third party of benefits paid to insured may not require additional expenditure from settlement or judgment amount as condition for continuing coverage of insured. So that's the LC we have in front of us for introduction. As always, your agreement to allow the bill to be introduced as a committee bill in no way signifies either your support or opposition to the bill. So with that, the chair would move the introduction of LC 1957 as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, the bill will be introduced as a committee bill. Our next order of business.
Can we start?
We're underway. And we do have a little decorum in the hearing room in the House Judiciary Committee. And we are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2409. Colleagues, you have a staff measure summary in front of you on House Bill 2409. You should know that this is a bill which we have on loan pursuant to House Rule 9.01 sub 5. Where the bill has been taken from the committee to which it's been assigned and has been provided to us as a reviewing committee. The rule provides that a reviewing committee may conduct hearings, hold work sessions, and forward a recommendation, including proposed amendments, to the original committee, which shall retain jurisdiction over the measure. This bill is technically then in the possession of Representative Canope's Committee on PERS, and Representative Canope, after staff counsel gives us a brief introduction of the bill, you'll be our first witness. Counsel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, House Bill 2409 provides for certification to the Supreme Court of an appeal in an action in which one or more cities or counties are the plaintiffs, the state of Oregon is defendant, and the appeal relates to a decision regarding the manner in which the public employee's retirement system is administered. It declares an emergency and is effective upon passage. As I've stated in my staff measure summary, Judge Paul Lipscomb's final judgment was recently issued in the case entitled The City of Eugene versus PERS, and the judge found, among other things, that between 1996 and through 2000, the PERS board violated Oregon law in the manner in which it distributed and calculated retirement benefits. I'll let the rest of the staff measure speak for itself.
Our first witness, Representative Cano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, my apologies for the interruption of your august committee. Chair and committee members, the reason I ask that this bill be taken up by your committee, and we've loaned it to you, is because we want to make sure that on issues related to the courts that the Judiciary Committee goes through those issues to make sure that we get them right. And even though this is sort of a PERS-related issue, it clearly is a courts-related issue. And I don't believe that I've ever been before five attorneys before. I think if we add two more, we can put black robes on you and get this process started immediately. Maybe we could amend the bill to that effect, that you guys could just make the decision on the whole Lipscomb issue, and and we maybe just dispense with the other part of the bill. But in all honesty, what this bill is intended to do is to see if the Supreme Court is willing to fast-track this particular decision. Clearly, we recognize that they could turn us down and that they're under no time constraint as it relates to this. However, I know the court has been sensitive in the past to timing as it relates to issues, and clearly PERS is one of those issues that would be detrimental for it to linger for years before a decision was made on the Lipscomb decision. So we're hoping that you will take a look at this bill, and since it doesn't actually have the words Lipscomb in it, we're hoping that we will get that bill before the court and not some obscure bill that nobody, or obscure case that nobody has considered, that we accidentally send the wrong bill there. So that's why we've asked you to take a look at this and make sure it actually does what we want it to do. And as it relates to the PERS issue, you know, clearly Lipscomb had everything to do with PERS and whether or not the board administered some things properly and so on. And in that relationship, we would like to move this bill forward to start that discussion, recognizing that we could be still years in this process, but to me, it would be unacceptable to allow this case to continue, knowing that we have the opportunity to speed it up. But we could be here 2 years from now, and this could still be legitimately just finishing up in the Court of Appeals if they decided that they didn't want to move it forward in a timely manner. And since we're in session and we have the opportunity, I wanted to make sure that we took every opportunity to find resolution to the PERS issue into these cases as soon as practically possible. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Are there questions for Representative Cano? None? Okay.
Mr. Chair, just one. Yeah. Maybe this goes to the bill. Are we sure that we've only captured one case in this description of the... Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Representative Canope has the great advantage of having legislative counsel sitting sort of up his right shoulder there.
Well, and I think we all recognize legislative counsel has never erred, and I think that's a critical thing to put on the record, and that's why, you know, honestly, that's why we wanted to make sure that we had several attorneys who are familiar with the process, and that we did some due diligence to make sure that we didn't accidentally catch up by either more than one case or the wrong case. But I'm confident that legislative counsel has made this narrow enough where it'll have an effect. But never hurts to have a second set of attorneys looking at this particular issue.
Counsel, you have a question?
I'm wondering, thank you, Mr. Chairman, would this a measure apply to future cases involving the same parties an issue?
Before the date.
It says, if the notice of appeal of an action described by subsection 2 of this section was filed before the effective date of the act.
That's the hook, right, to keep it on just for this one case. Can we ask a follow-up question just for the record?
You may, Representative Prozanski.
Why is it that we would not want to expedite any other matters that may be on PERS that could be dealing with similar issues that are filed in either Marin County or apparently maybe in some other county after this effective date?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Prozanski, you've hit on a very important point, and I think the answer is we do and we will. And there have been a couple of suggested ways to do that, and one is a omnibus bill at the end that takes all the cases that we have passed or that have been signed into law and says, you know, legally, these cases, should they be appealed through, you know, from the circuit court, or once the circuit court has decided on them and they are appealed, that they would go directly to the Supreme Court. And the other is to include, the other way, I guess, would be to include a provision in each bill that we believe is likely to be appealed or sent to a court, that we put that in that bill as a, you know, kind of a set-aside that says that for each particular bill that we do pass. So, and I'd be interested, quite frankly, in this committee's thoughts on how to do that, because although I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about how we do that yet, I believe we're probably coming up on a bill or two in the near future where it would relate and likely will end up in court. So I would actually want to defer to the judgment of this committee as to how we would approach that particular subject.
And if I could represent Prozanski, I think the I'll just put this on the record. I am generally and have generally been pretty resistant to the idea of selectively expediting cases to the Supreme Court. I think we have a process. I think to the extent that we delve into managing the court's docket from a legislative standpoint, it is something that ought to be done only in the rarest of circumstances with the utmost consideration and with a significant amount of real deliberation on our part as to whether or not we do that. So I am concerned or would be concerned about a blanket provision that would allow, and you notice here that if we were to just take off this hook, for example, it would allow any city or county potentially to file a lawsuit. I mean, this one, we know what the case is, we know what the facts of the case are, we know what's attempted to be achieved by putting this forward to the Supreme Court. I'm not sure I would be in favor of a blanket opportunity to expedite any PERS litigation directly to the Supreme Court. Now, to the extent additional issues arise as bills move through this process, and we can narrowly define as those issues come up in the bill the things that we would want, if challenged legally, expedited. I think that's another discussion and one that we ought to have. But to the extent we're starting to wade into the judicial branch's business about how they handle cases, I think we need to wade very, very cautiously and to keep ourselves as much as possible in the shallow water. That's my own personal opinion. But I do think that there are, at times, circumstances which require, for the general good of the order, that we leapfrog certain issues to the court for the benefit of everyone, and I think this is an effort to accomplish that. Representative McPherson, did you have a comment? I know you serve on the PERS committee as well.
I do, Chair. William said, and thank you for inviting. I guess it's more a comment than it is a question, although I would certainly invite Representative Canope to comment on this. It seems to me there's a strong public policy interest in having the set of issues that's addressed in what's called the Lipscomb case go forward quickly to the Supreme Court, and I think there are other pieces of legislation that we will be considering in this session of the legislature that raise the same need for prompt attention. Those issues, I think, are, although there's some similarity, there also are some distinct factual difference between those two sets of concerns, that is the ones raised as to what was done under current law in the Lipscomb litigation and those issues that may arise out of changes that are considered in this session. So I think we should recognize that there's a distinct difference there and that this is really has to stand on its own, that is the merits of expediting consideration of this particular case.
Yes, Representative Brzezinski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess my comment, I just want to make sure we have the records established. I'm not, anyway, hopefully my comment wasn't saying that I felt that we needed to do a blanket. I know it's been very rarely used. We used it with the term limits because, again, public policy, I think, just really mandated that we had a quick and final resolution sooner than later. It does appear, though, and maybe this is nothing we need to be worried about, but under this legislation, if it passes as is, if there's another suit filed on the existing current law, it will not be caught up in this, and it will not be expedited. It would go on its own track and course.
Right. And I actually, in my mind, I think that's a logical result, in my own view. Do you want to comment, Representative Canope?
No, Mr. Chair, I respect the thoughtful approach which you've taken as it relates to not getting, essentially not messing in the court's business and with their particular docket. I would note for the record, though, I think 2 years ago there was not unanimity in this chamber among members, among lobby, and among the public that this was a crisis-type issue. Clearly, over the last 2 years, it has become that. And the urgency I feel is that I truly believe that the future of the state of Oregon does hang in the balance as it relates to this PERS issue. I think it is that important. And for that reason, I think it is critical that we get these cases before the court to allow them to make the decisions, because we need to know one way or the other what it is that we are able to do in this regard. And we recognize, I think, as a body that we are only one part of this process, and while we can tell the court where we would like policy to head, we clearly cannot solve this issue. It will have to ultimately come from direction from the Supreme Court, and that's why I think it's even though it should be rare, I think on this issue there will probably be more than one instance in which we will need to ask for this expedited review. It'll probably be in three or four cases would be my guess at this point.
Okay. Yes, Representative Pisanski.
Mr. Chair, I want to wordsmith, but when I hear cases, I want to make certain that we're talking a case and potentially bills that may be coming through as compared to other cases, because I think the record is demonstrating that we're looking at capturing the one case that's currently in the process of being appealed, and we will look at another day whether or not we will take the same track for bills that may be coming through.
Right. And clearly, as a person who's never been to law school, as the esteemed many of the esteemed members of this committee have been, and I may have not used the correct terminology, but I believe there will be three or four bills that will likely turn into cases eventually, and as you know, they could be married into a single decision or be heard at the same time by the courts, and I'm sure you all know what that terminology is, but clearly I do not. And I appreciate the fact that this committee was willing to hear this today. I would say that it would be much more intimidating if I were to come up here and you all had your law school diplomas hanging right next to in front of your name plaques, because I think it would be incredibly intimidating, and I'm actually shocked that, in fact, that it hasn't happened yet. But I make the suggestion for the chair's approval.
For Representative Barker and Representative Crummell and Representative Anderson, we don't want to make them feel bad.
Well, but I think Representative Barker would have a sergeant of arms knowing the past history.
Yes, Representative Ackerman.
Has a final judgment been entered in this case, Lipscomb case?
The judgment has been entered, and it is currently in the window for which you can appeal, and I believe that window closes on like the 13th of this month.
That was going to be my next question.
Yes.
Is it going to be possible for us to get this through the process by that mm-hmm. time, or should we consider that this issue could be raised by filing an amended notice of appeal?
Well, we have the luxury of having a couple of gentlemen here who represent PERS. Steve, do you want to come forward and make some comments on the timing of the legal status of the case? And introduce
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Steve Rodman. I'm the manager of Policy Planning and Legislative Analysis for PERS. And the final judgment has been entered as to the petitioner's claims in this case, but not as to the intervener's claims. That's subject to a separate hearing on the 14th, and judgment will be entered at some point after that. So the final judgment on the petitioner's claims was entered on January 17th, and 30 days out from that would put it to sometime, you know, next week or soon the week after as to when notice of appeal will have to be filed. And notice of appeal has already been filed by the interveners.
Does that answer your question, Representative Ackerman?
Well, it answers my question, but it raises a problem as to whether if this bill is passed out after the time periods have expired, or if I follow you correctly, there's already a notice of appeal has been filed in a portion of the case, perhaps we would have to put in this bill that the fast-track issue could be raised with the court by filing an amended notice of appeal.
Although it does say if a notice of appeal of an action described by subsection 2 of this section was filed before the effective date of the 2003 Act. So the effective date of the 2003 Act would be after it's passed the Senate and has received the governor's signature, and because it declares an emergency, its effect on passage. So, Greg, that would be when the governor signs it, right?
Delivers it to the Secretary of State.
Okay. You want to come up to the table, Greg? I think it's important that we walk through the process so everybody understands. The way the bill is written then would become effective upon passage, and the appeal notice would simply have to be filed before the effective date of the Act. So conceivably, as Representative Ackerman points out, one could find, you could have a potential problem if we pass this out of the House on Friday or Monday and it passed the Senate on Wednesday, and it got signed by the governor next Friday, and the notice of appeal had not been filed. Am I right?
Mr. Chair, Members, Greg Chamov, Legislative Council, yes.
Now, the likelihood of that happening is rather small. So, Tim, do you have a recommendation? Do you have a thought about what you think ought to happen?
Well, clearly, Mr. Chair, we do control the process as it relates to the timeline, and I can't see any scenario in which this bill would leave this building, and quite frankly, before the March 1st. So I think we're probably well within the or well beyond the time limit or that would potentially cause a problem. But we could clearly hold the bill in either the House or the Senate until that timeline passes.
And give me the drop-dead date for purposes of the appeal against you.
Well, as to the petitioner's claim, which is most of them, that's I haven't counted the days, but I think it's February 15th or 16th, and but those fall on a weekend, so probably the 17th of February. And as to the intervener's claims, that's the individual members that sued. Those claims have not been reduced to final judgment, so the notice of appeal has not started running on that.
And you anticipate the final judgment? Do you have an idea?
There's a hearing on our motion to reconsider on the 14th of February. The judgment will be entered soon after that, but I don't know how soon.
And then there's 30 days after that. Is there a concern, and I'll maybe put this to Greg, I mean, you would then be in a position where potentially you could split the expedited nature of the case. Where Do the interveners get left behind if they haven't got the thing in final before the petitioner's piece starts to move under this expedited effort? Or does it all pull together?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe that there would be no splitting, that the movement of the case toward the Court of Appeals would get intercepted and the whole case would go up to the Supreme Court.
Anybody?
Well, it seems that, Mr. Chairman, as long as the appeal is filed within the correct amount of time, once this legislation is passed and signed, the jurisdiction of the appellate court will immediately end, and that appeal, no matter what stage it will be in, and if there are two appeals, will immediately proceed to the Supreme Court, which would then have discretion to consolidate.
We have a great opportunity here. Steve, I'm going to ask you to withdraw for a moment. Okay. And I'm going to ask Jim Nass, who just swore at me under his breath.
Uh-huh.
I saw that, Jim. Jim is a staff counsel for the court. And if you didn't want to talk, Jim, you should have watched it on TV.
I was saying thank you under my breath, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'm sure you were.
For the record, my name is Jim Nass, Appellate Legal Counsel. Mr. Chair, as I read the bill, the critical event is when the action was filed, because subsection 2 reads, subsection 1 of this section applies to an appeal of a judgment in an action filed in a circuit court before the effective date of this 2003 Act. As I understand it, any appeal from a case pending when this bill passes will be swept up and will be subject to the automatic certification.
So none of the stuff we're talking about in Section 3, in your opinion, matters as to the timing of when the judgment is entered or the notices of appeal are filed?
Correct. In my view, this bill would apply to the one appeal that I know of that has been filed and would apply to any other appeal filed out of the case pending in Marion County Circuit Court. I would note that in this window between now and when this bill becomes effective, if another city or county filed an action against the state involving PERS, this bill would sweep that case up too. And I don't know whether there is anyone planning to file such an action.
Counsel, do you have any comment? Legislative counsel?
Mr. Chair, I don't have anything to add to that, no.
Okay. Are there any questions for either Mr. Chamoff or Mr. Nass? Jim, do you guys didn't sign up to talk or take a position on the bill. This is your opportunity to sort of say anything you want.
Mr. Chair, unfortunately, I became aware of the scheduling of the bill so late that I didn't have a chance to confer with the Chief Judge or the Chief Justice, and I don't know what the respective positions of the courts are.
Okay. This bill is under loan, so we're in a unique position to talk about the merits of the bill and do nothing about its substance. This bill will go back before it moves to the floor, to the PERS committee. To the extent the court has a position on the bill, I will just put on the record that I've had over the years several conversations with the Chief Justice about this concept. And I know that it is not well received generally by the court to have us expedite cases to them, although I think they recognize at times that we're put in a situation where that is required. But if there are particular technical concerns about the bill, I would hope that the court would make us aware of those as quickly as possible.
Mr. Chair, if I may say one thing, it is possible that the court on its own motion or on motion of a party, if one of the parties chose to file one, would actually move the court to certify. And if the Court of Appeals certified it and if this certification went through, then in effect this bill would be moot. But I don't know if that's going to happen. But we would certainly let you know and let the representative
That's the concern of the bill is that those are all permissive processes, but not necessarily guaranteed. And we're looking for what little guarantee we can get as to the expedited nature of the review. That being said, I'd also remind everybody that once you get it to the court, doesn't give you any ability to tell the court when it must decide the case. And so we can get it to the court through some sort of an expedited fashion, but we will still, at the court's pleasure, wait to hear the outcome. That could be some period of time, obviously. Any other questions for anyone on the bill? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Is there anyone else here who wants to comment or testify on House Bill 2409? Please come forward. And identify yourselves for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council and also a member of the PERS Coalition. However, today I'm only speaking on behalf of the Oregon State Firefighters. I believe that we, in concept, agree with the concept of this bill. However, one of the things, as certainly a layperson that doesn't have the knowledge or the distinguished legal abilities that many of the distinguished committee members have, my sense of expeditious in my business means code threes, lights, and sirens fairly quickly to the scene. However, one thing that I think what I understand little about this bill is that although this may be expeditious as far as a fast track to the Supreme Court, that does not necessarily mean that in a six-month time or even a year from now that all the issues dealing with PERS would be addressed and done. And so our position would be is while we support this bill, we will continue to work hard with Chair Knope and other members of the PERS committee and with the legislative body to try to reduce the amount of legislation that has to go forward potentially to the courts and to work to resolve issues. So I was hoping that maybe you could give me a little bit of a sense, and certainly my colleague Bill here can explain at least the timing a little bit better, and that was my only concern, is that the impression that may be out there from the public and even from some of my members that expeditious does not necessarily mean that this would be done within a 3 or 4 month period. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions if I could, as long as they're not legal ones. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There's a lawyer with him.
Yeah, he's got his lawyer with him, Mr. Linden.
Mr. Chairman, for your record, Bill Linden, representing the Association of Oregon Faculties and the Oregon PERS Retirees. And actually, Mr. Chairman, you made the point I was going to make in your last comment when the first panel was up here, and that is simply that I would urge you and your colleagues to make it clear to the House and the Senate when this bill is debated that this is no guarantee of a multi-month solution to this issue, that this is in all likelihood still going to be a protracted appeal process, because we have to remember this bill simply mandates certification. It doesn't do anything beyond that. And to the extent that you're able to let everyone of your colleagues know that, you know, that what this bill does and what it doesn't do, I think is important, because there's an awful lot of people in this building looking for solutions to the PERS issues that are going on, and keeping everyone realistic about what these various bills, including this one, do and do not do is very important. We, for example, in our discussion with Representative Canopen and other colleagues of yours, are searching for solutions that are guaranteed to the extent they can be to keep us out of litigation. We can't do anything about this particular case because it's out there, but to the extent you can help educate everybody that this is probably still a multi-year solution as opposed to a multi-month solution, I think would be very helpful to the process. I appreciate your indulgence.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Linden and Mr. Livingston. Are there questions for either of these witnesses? Good, thank you. Appreciate it. Steve, do you guys have anything else to offer at this point? Any other comments you want to make? Okay. Is there anybody else? All right. Hearing no other witnesses, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2409. Colleagues, the rules on a borrowing of a bill allow us to go into work session if we choose to, or simply to. But the way we get the bill back to the committee that it came from is by a letter essentially from me to the Speaker that says something to the effect that after holding a public hearing on February 6, 2003, the House Judiciary Committee recommends insert information here and returns House Bill 2409 to the PERS Committee. So I intend, with the committee's approval, if there isn't any objection, to write a letter back to the Speaker with the bill, returning it to the PERS Committee with no recommendation as to changes being made in the bill.
That answers.
Does that answer your question?
I was going to ask as to what type of position or comment we had to put back in since it was referred to us. You've answered it.
Yeah, this is a situation where I don't think we need to actually take a position as to whether we recommend with a due pass or not a due pass. We were asked to look at the bill for a technical purpose, and I think we've met that requirement, and I would simply just send it back that we would not recommend any amendments to the bill, and that it's sufficient to do what it was intended to do. Is that sufficient with the members of the committee? Okay, then that's how the chair will handle that issue. Okay, we will next move to House Bill 2314, and we will open a public hearing. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2314 was introduced at the request of the Legislative Council Committee. Corrects references in the laws relating to trusts. It corrects cross-references. It does not make substantive changes to the law. And I'll let
Council Chamoff
explain the rest of it.
Mr. Chair, members, Greg Chamoff, Legislative Council. As we take the laws that you have passed and blend them into the Oregon Revised Statutes, we find places where the law is not as clear as it could be. When those changes are not substantive and, in our judgment, not likely to raise anyone's hackles, we put those changes in the revisor's bill. That is this session, Senate Bill 81, which should be passing out of the Senate shortly on its way to you. When we find a change that might be substantive or someone might think is substantive, we split that change into a separate bill. And what you have in front of you today is a series of the separate bills that we think make either non-substantive changes or changes that are so innocuous that they don't really rise to the level of any significant change in the law, but are either in an area that often draws people's interests or are sufficiently unclear that we put them into these separate bills so that it wouldn't bog down the reviser's bill. In the case of House Bill 2314, once upon a time we referenced what we were trying to say was a person for whom a trust has been established, and instead of saying it in those words, we listed all of the places in the code where a trust might be established. As it turns out, that list includes places that we probably didn't mean for that to happen, and so rather than continue with the list, we've taken it out and just put in the words, a person for whom a trust has been established, with the hope that we will no longer be over-inclusive and will be clearer as to what we're trying to say.
Are there questions? Representative Shetterly?
No.
Okay. You're usually our trust guy.
Yeah, well, this is boring.
All right. Just exactly what Mr. Chamoff was hoping to hear. Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2314? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2314. Representative Shetterly.
Move House Bill 2314 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterly moves House Bill 2314 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will go to the floor. Representative Shetterly, since it has trusts?
You bet.
All right. Because we all trust you.
No.
All right.
So does my dog.
We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2316. Mr. Chamoff, both counsel and then Mr. Chamoff.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2316 repeals the law that makes abolishment of the Board of Trustees of Children's Trust Fund contingent upon certain conditions. Apparently those certain conditions no longer exist because of the change of the state of affairs, and it is a superfluous law, as I understand.
Council Chamoff.
Mr. Chair, members, Greg Chamoff, Legislative Council. Before I comment on House Bill 2316 to address Mr. Representative Shetterly's concern about boredom, I want to assure him that when the reviser's bill comes, it will have even more nuggets in the explanatory notes than last time, and we will be awarding prizes to the members who find those nuggets in the explanatory notes. Not a member of the Senate committee was able to come up with one.
Representative Shetterly.
Well, I want to thank Mr. Chamoff for that. I searched in vain when we looked at the tax revisers bill. I was disappointed, frankly, that council had not put those nuggets into that bill, so I'll look forward to them in this one.
For those of you who might not know what the heck we're talking about, last session in the revisers bill, in bracketed material, the Legislative Council's office often explains why this small, innocuous change is being made, and they had a bit of sport with this last session, and I think the best one was Representative Shetterly futzes with syntax, I think, was there. So, anyway, be aware.
With that, thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's the little things that we
it's the prizes.
House Bill 2316 deals with the Children's Trust Fund. When you pay your taxes, you may see a little box at the back checked for sending money to this fund. It used to be that there was a state board of trustees. A couple sessions ago, the legislature changed that from a state entity to a nonprofit corporation. And in the process, conditioned that change on a number of events that aren't all objective, verifiable, including that the change from the state entity to the private nonprofit corporation was consistent with federal law. And as we understand it, the transfer from the state entity to the nonprofit has occurred. The nonprofit is going about the business that had previously been that of the state entity, and it does not appear that the need for the contingency language remains. And so our suggestion in this measure is to take it out of the law.
Other questions? Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2316? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2316. We'll open a work session. Representative Crummell.
Mr. Chair, I would move 2316 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Crummell moves House Bill 2316 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, House Bill 2316 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Crummell, would you like to carry this bill?
Certainly.
Yeah, thank you. We'll now open a public hearing on House Bill 2318. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to note that I did find solecism in one of the Senate bills, but the chairman that morning seemed like he wanted to move on quickly, so I did not point that one out. But I did have to ask later what solecism really meant. According to legislative counsel, this measure is intended to make technical corrections to the statutes relating to records. Specifically, it substitutes the term public body for the former term state agency or political subdivision. It also directs the Department of Administrative Services to report to the Legislative Assembly at least once a biennium about how well agencies are doing in streamlining their reports.
Mr. Chamaw.
Mr. Chair, members, Greg Chamaw of Legislative Council. To that, I would only add that the only other thing that the bill does is to update the numbers of some federal statutes that Congress went and changed on us since the previous time we adopted some laws.
Are there any questions about House Bill 2318? Is there anyone else here to testify about House Bill 2318? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2318. We'll open a work session.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
House Bill 2318 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterly moves House Bill 2318 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Who hasn't had a chance to carry a bill for the committee yet? Representative McPherson?
I have not.
All right.
Chair.
This one will be yours.
All right.
And now we'll move to House Bill 2319 and open a public hearing. Council?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 2319 makes technical corrections to statutes relating to legislative committees. Apparently, the current law still refers to typed or metal plates and medium of publication. And in this age of computers, they're modernizing the language to excise those references.
Mr. Chamaw.
Mr. Chair, members, Greg Chamaw of Legislative Council. That's a fair summary of the bill. When you created the Legislative Council Committee in 1953, you gave us instructions about what to do with the metal plates and type that we use to produce the Oregon Revised Statutes. We don't actually follow your directions when we were done with the ones that we used to use. We now use them as paperweights. We now use an electronic medium where we transmit by computer to produce the Oregon Revised Statutes, and we thought it was best to update the statutes to reflect that there's been a change in publication method in the last 50 years.
Where are the old plates now, Mr. Chamaw?
Well, Mr. Chair, a portion of one is on my desk holding down some of the many bill requests you've made.
No.
Touche. I also noticed that you've gotten rid of the section of the bill regarding the replacement parts thereof for the Oregon Revised Statutes.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We don't produce replacement parts to the Oregon Revised Statutes. Rather than simply stuffing all the new laws that you adopt into the back of each two-year set of the Oregon Revised Statutes, we go to the trouble of blending the statutes in and producing a whole new set every 2 years.
It used to be, colleagues, and I know that many of my colleagues remember, that you would get these replacement pages, and you had this book of binders that were all these old gray binders, and you would have to go through and sort of put them together again and pull them apart, and it was a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that? And the three-hole punches would sort of break, and so you would have sort of loose sheets of the laws sort of floating. It was a bad scene. So, good. Any other questions? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2319, open work session.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Brzezinski.
I'd like to move House Bill 2319 to the floor's consent calendar with a do-pass recommendation.
Well, it's a hard thing to want to put something on the consent calendar for me, Representative Brzezinski. And knowing that Representative Ackerman has yet to carry a bill for the committee, am I right about that?
You're right, and I'm looking for a winner, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brzezinski, I'd like to amend your motion.
So give me my chance. Okay.
The House Bill 2319 be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is that fine, Representative Brzezinski?
Yes, it's a friendly amendment, and I will consent to that.
Representative Anderson?
Could we take a vote on that? Because I was thinking this would be a great one for practice.
Yeah. Oh, you were hoping. Well, we got one more for you.
No.
We got one more for you, Representative Anderson. So that is the motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move, and we will have Representative Ackerman carry that. It should be our senior lawyer on the committee who can talk about metal plates and replacement parts to the ORS. And finally, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2322. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, House Bill 2322 adds certain existing sections of Oregon law to ORS Chapter 107.
This was easy, yeah.
Specifically, ORS Chapter 107 deals with divorce, and the Legislative Assembly has added provisions to the chapter without keying the provisions to the provisions that define terms. This measure does that and keys otherwise floating provisions to the terms that are being used. So the statute makes sense.
Mr. Chamoff.
Mr. Chair, members, Greg Chamoff, Legislative Council. I don't think I can improve upon that explanation.
All right. Any questions?
I have one question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cromwell.
When does an action of the legislative body move from being an Oregon law to being an ORS?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cromwell. Usually about November following session, we take all of the Oregon laws, and then those that are permanent, not appropriation bills, not measures that have a limited duration, say you've put a sunset on it, we take those, and then in the months following sine die, do that blending. And so we're generally done with our work sometime around the end of November. It goes off to a printer, and if everything goes right, is back here by late December or early January.
Representative Cromwell, it's helpful to know that there are a number of things that we do which are temporary,
right?
And short time frames that aren't going to be permanent law changes that never make it into the ORS. And those are the things that are sort of detailed in the big brown set of the Oregon laws. Is that an accurate statement,
Mr. Chair? That's correct.
Thank you. I didn't know if that was pertinent to this particular bill or not, but it seemed like it might be. So
yeah, well, it's a good question. I think a lot of our members maybe don't know exactly how that process works. Is there any other questions? Representative Anderson?
No. I was saying I'm one of them.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Anyone else here to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2322. Representative Anderson moves.
That we pass this to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Anderson moves House Bill 2322 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move and we'll assign it to Representative Anderson to carry on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your consideration.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chamoff, for a scintillating afternoon discussion. You really know how to pack the room, too.
Yeah.
And, committee, we are adjourned until we don't have committee tomorrow, so we are adjourned until Monday.
We don't have committee tomorrow.
Time to work.
Yeah.